Legal 115, this is your podcast for week number 3, and we are going to discuss property. I did not post any documents or reading materials, and your expectation for this week is to listen to this podcast. You can listen, you can re-listen, you can re-listen and listen again, but have a notebook and take notes, and it shouldn't be too difficult because, in essence, these are things that, for the most part, you know, but more importantly, these are things that you absolutely should know, not only for the law, but you really, all people should know this. All people should know these things in general. You need to know these things in a greater detail and how these things are impacted by the law. And I'm talking about property this week, and if you have me for family law, and you may have had me for other courses like criminal law, you may have heard me say that there are two things that people get most jacked up about, most emotional about, most likely to need to have intervention of the police or somebody over. And, you know, one is family relationships, the people they love, and the other is their property. But over and above that, it's very important, I think, that you, we, all of us understand property. It's something that probably should have been taught to people in grade school. It's a civic duty kind of thing. It's something that people need to understand, and when they understand it, then they can appreciate better both what they have or what they could have or what other people have. So, you have your notebook, pad of paper, and a pen. You're ready, and if not, pause this and go get it, because I'm ready to rock and roll. There's two categories of property that you need to be concerned with. Real property and personal property. Now, real property includes land, plus any building or fixtures permanently attached to that land. Okay? Anything that's permanently attached to that land or intended to be permanently attached to that land. It's not easily movable. It's not on wheels or able to be picked up easily. It's intended to be part of that land. So buildings and anything that else that might be a, you know, something that's intended to stay with the land. It includes agricultural, commercial, industrial, residential properties. Now, personal property is anything that's not real property. It's not permanently affixed to the land. So it can be your furniture, your clothing, your other personal items, computers, your money, your bank accounts, your vehicles, anything that isn't real property. So again, real property is land and anything affixed to that land, any building or permanent fixtures, things that are attached to the land. Sometimes we refer to real property as real estate. My wife sells in residential real estate. Okay, houses, condos, apartment buildings. Those are the easy ones, right? And we're all familiar with those things. Those things are real property. Anything else is personal property. And in the law, especially if you're in classes this semester, because it applies to family law almost as equally as it does to estate planning or probate in the wills, trusts, and estates class, it's very important to understand those two categories and be able to break those two categories down in various ways. As I said, real property can also be synonymous with real estate, But it can also be defined as the rights that are attached to the property in that real estate. Real property has benefits and interest in the ownership of the real estate. In other words, real property deals with human activity, and real property deals with the benefits and interest of that human activity regarding that property, that land and things affixed to the land. Real property references a physical property and the rights to that property, and those rights may include the right to possess that property, okay? The right to live on, to be on, to possess that property. It can be the right of enjoyment to use that real property within the confinements of law. So, if you have the right or ownership of that property, you can have the right of possession and the right to enjoy it. If you have a lease on property, you rent an apartment, you have the right to possess it and enjoy it. Right of exclusion, the right to prohibit others from trespassing and entering on the property or using it. Ownership or leasing, you have that right. Leasing, you may be subject, depending on what your lease says, to allowing the landlord or their employees onto the property on various terms. You have the right to control the real property within the boundaries of law. Okay, when I say within the boundaries of law, you know, at my house, I have the right to control my property, but I can't do anything and everything I want. In fact, some things I'm fairly restricted on. So, you know, I can't dig up certain areas of my property because there are utility easements and it would interfere with the power or electric, the water or whatever of my neighbor. I'm not allowed to have a fence of a certain kind because in my city and where I live, I have to have those things approved. Most places, if you live within a municipality, a village, a city, a town, you have zoning expectations. So that's within the confinements of the law. You can't do everything you want, but you have the right to control the property within the boundaries of the law. If you're leasing the property, renting the property, then you have the right to control that property, but it's subject to the boundaries of the lease in addition to the law. Now, right of disposition is typically only going to apply to ownership of property where you have the right to transfer, sell, dispose of your property by will, give it away. If you're leasing or renting property, you don't have a right of disposition unless there's in the lease a right to sublease that property to somebody else. And typically those are fairly excluded or really restricted based on the landlord's approval or some sort of other thing that happens. Now we break down real property. If you think about Central Illinois, we have agricultural property. Okay, we have real property that's land that's used to grow crops or grow or to feed livestock, agricultural property. We have residential property, property that human beings live in. It's their house, their apartment, their condo. It's their four walls and a roof. We have commercial property. Commercial property would be the Hy-Vee or the Walmart or Costco or, shopping complex. We have industrial property. That would be the Caterpillar plant in Mapleton or Mossville. It would be, Pioneer Park area where there's warehouses and factories. We have mixed use areas where we might have any number of those things. Within a mile of my house, I've got a hay field. I've got a couple parks. I've got, you know, shops and stores and car washes and gas stations. I've got a bunch of houses of all different kinds, or housing of all different kinds. Houses, apartments, condos. And I'm sure that's the same for most of us. Most of us live in mixed-use areas or close to, and we know what we're talking about. And then sometimes we have real property that's designated for a special use. It can only be used for a certain thing, a certain activity, a certain group of people for a certain activity. So much rarer than the norm. But normally we're dealing with agricultural, residential, commercial, industrial, or some mix of those. One of the things that I'm going to have you do as your assignment for this class, and I'll introduce that a little later, is to perform an inventory of someone's real property and be prepared to discuss that inventory in those categories that I mentioned. You know, where does it fall? And then also, you know, how it is owned. We'll get into this in greater detail later, but there's two main ways that, or three main ways, I guess, that somebody can own property. One, they can own it by themselves, solely, okay? The other would be as joint tenants. And then finally, tenants in common. Now, I want you to know the difference between joint tenants and tenants in common. If two people own property as joint tenants, what that means is that if one of those people passes away, all of the interest in the property transfers to the surviving joint tenant, the person who is remaining. All right? Joint tenancy has a right of survivorship. The surviving joint tenant walks away with all of the property when their joint tenant passes away. They die. Tenants in common is different. In tenants in common, you have two people who own a piece of property. One of those people passes away. They die. Their share of that property goes to their estate. We're going to deal with estates later in the semester, but their property goes to their estate, to whoever they designate, their heirs, their survivors, which could be different from the other owner of the property. Now, typically we see joint tenancy situations where it's a married couple or you know, close family member that they want to leave that property to that other person. And then it goes to that other person outside of probate. It doesn't have to be probated. Whereas tenants in common is typically in situations where one party wants their share of that real estate, that property, real property, to go to other people, people other than the person that they own the property with. It's important for you to know the difference between joint tenancy and tenants in common. Now let's talk about personal property. We already know that personal property is anything that isn't real property, and now we understand what is real property. But let's break personal property down a little further into terms that you should be familiar with and a way that you should start thinking about personal property. personal property is going to be divided further into tangible and intangible property. Tangible property is just that. It has a physical form. It can be seen, touched, and moved. It is in itself what it says it is, and that's its value. Its value is in that physical thing. Examples of tangible personal property include clothing, books, computers. On the other hand, intangible personal property is an abstraction. Intangible personal property does not usually have a physical form, other than, say, certificates or accompanying records, documents of investments, patents, trademarks, stocks, bonds. But even those things are not the same as they once were. Intangible property, it represents value, but the document, the thing in of itself, is not valuable at all. It represents value. So, tangible personal property is just that. It has a physical form. It can be seen, touched, and moved. It is valuable in and of itself. Intangible personal property, or intangibles, refer to personal property that cannot actually be moved, touched, or felt, but instead it represents something of value, such as a bond, a document, a title to a car. The title to the car doesn't represent the car, it represents ownership in the car. Security, services, the dollar bill, a receipt for your dry cleaning. You follow me? Start thinking in terms of tangible and intangible. Now, we also inventory personal property. And just as we'd like to know if there's any ownership issues with personal property, typically we can figure that out. Now, there are some forms of personal property, such as the vehicle, anything that has a title. But that title will indicate, just as real estate will, how that property is held. Okay? The title will tell us how that car is held, who owns that car. Personal property can be a little bit less certain other than those titled things. So, for instance, if later in the semester we have an estate question, someone passes away and they have a house full of personal property. If other people live in the house or share the house, how do you know who owns these items? Well, you're kind of left to someone telling you. All right, unless it's specifically set forth in an inventory. And it's not a bad idea to do a personal inventory for yourself to determine what your tangible and intangible personal items are. Part of your assignment for this week is going to be doing that, creating that sort of personal inventory for someone else. So here's your assignment. You need to identify a relative, a friend, a family friend, a neighbor, a coworker, someone else who you know, someone who owns their own home. Now, they don't have to own it outright. They can have a mortgage. Most of us do. But they own a home. You need to ask that individual if you can interview them for this class. Part of what we do in the law is talk to other people. part of what we do in the law is talk to other people to gather information. So this is part of the assignment to give you some practice in doing that. We don't want you to share their full names, address, or any other identifying information. In describing their property, you can, as an example, tell us that your subject is the owner, subject to mortgage or not, of a 1.5-story wood frame home in Pekin, Illinois. Or they own a 2017 Ford Mustang GT that's paid off and has a Blue Book value of $12,000. How did you get that Blue Book value of $12,000? Look it up. Take that initiative. But then you're going to go through, and regarding their home, on number one, ask when they acquired it, how they hold title. So if anybody else owns it, and if somebody else owns it, is it in joint tenancy, tenants in common? If they know, if they have the deed, it'll say. If they have the deed available, take a look at the deed. And it'll say, read it. It'll tell you tenants in common or joint tenants if more than one person owns that real estate. Number two, do they own any other real estate? If so, describe that property and how they hold title to that property. Next, discuss their personal property and create an inventory based on the type of personal property they own. The type, the things, okay? You don't have to give me exact details, but you know, they own a boat, describe the boat. A car, describe the car. A motorcycle, describe the motorcycle. A grill, televisions, coin collection, whatever. Their personal property. Just give an inventory, a list of the types of things that they own. This is good practice for estates because all of this is essentially what you would do and help a client do if somebody passed away. It's what you would walk the client through and then help with that work or assist them in organizing that work. Post your assignment by the normal due date and time directly to the forum. No attachments. So write it out in Word or Google Docs. Check your spelling, grammar, etc. organization. Make sure it looks good and reads well. Cut and paste it into the assignment form. If you're using Google Chrome and doing this on a computer, that shouldn't be an issue ever. Do it by the normal due date and time, and then come back and read and comment on the post of other students. That's your assignment. Hopefully you get on this early, because if you don't, if you wait until the last day and the last few hours, you're going to be rushing and you won't do a great job and everybody will know it. It's week three, so use your calendars. We're almost a quarter of the way through the semester. As we get deeper into things, they become more complicated. And as the subjects and the assignments become more complicated, your time becomes more valuable. Your use of time and your prioritizing time, using your calendar, and doing things in an intentional and consistent manner will be something that serves you, not only for your success in the class, but also later down the road in a career. It's the week three podcast. If you need me, you know where to find me.